First, I'd like to thank the Fields Institute, especially Tom Salisbury, for this wonderful opportunity. Needless to say, this paper is co-authored with Steve Hackman and Yehel Gyat at the School of Industrial and Systems Engineering at Georgia Tech. Needless to say, I would really appreciate all comments, constructive and destructive. So here's the plan of the presentation. I'll begin with a brief introduction and a motivation of the problem. Then I'll present a verbal description of the theoretical model, just words. Then talk about some of the model details, not all of them. Most of the details are in the paper. Then I'll present the main analytical results of the paper. Then talk about the calibration of the model to data, to real-world data. And then I'll present the results of a numerical analysis of the model, and then conclude. So I'll begin with this quote from The Economist that sort of captures the essence of what this paper is about. Entrepreneurs tend to be wildly over-optimistic. If they were not, they would never get past their first crisis. Now, we are going to talk about this in the context of venture capital financing. Now, why is venture capital financing important? As we all know, this is the primary means through which new ventures are financed, ideas are brought to fruition. In fact, empirical evidence has documented that VCs have created one-third of the total market value of all publicly traded companies in the U.S. So they clearly play a very important role in engendering economic growth. Now, empirical evidence as well as anecdotal evidence has documented several important characteristics of VC relationships. First, they are associated with high levels of risk, with the players often having different attitudes towards risk. Venture capitalists tend to be well diversified. Entrepreneurs tend to be undiversified with a lot of their human capital, so to say, associated with the project. So they basically have different attitudes towards risk. In economic jargon, these lead to agency conflicts. Second characteristic is often there's imperfect information about potential payoffs. At the outset, nobody knows what's going to happen. People only have a rough idea. So you cannot even, so there's a lot of imperfect information. The third is that there are divergent views about potential payoffs. In other words, asymmetric beliefs. As the quote says, entrepreneurs tend to be more optimistic than venture capitalists. And finally, we observe that venture capital relationships feature staged investment, meaning capital investments are made over time, and dynamic contracting. So there are usually long-term contracts between venture capitalists and entrepreneurs which are often updated, or in fact always updated based on realizations of project quality. So we look at cash flows, and based on these cash flows, they revise contracts. That's dynamic contracting. So the research objective, our research objective in this paper and sort of some companion papers, are basically to develop a theory of venture capital investment that incorporates all these features in a dynamic setting. Now, what's the goal of this theoretical framework? Basically, we want to study how exactly risk, imperfect information, agency conflicts, and asymmetric beliefs affect VCE and relationships. In other words, we want to study how they affect the economic value. What is the economic value that they generate? Specifically, we want to incorporate as many realistic features as possible, of course, given the demands of analytical tractability, to be able to come up with a valuation model for new ventures. It's like an asset pricing model. How do you value a new venture? How do you come up with that? How do you measure the risk of this new venture? So that hopefully this model is a small, a humble first step in this direction. We then want to study the structure of long-term dynamic contracts between VCs and entrepreneurs, study how VC investment is staged over time, and then examine the duration of venture capitalist-entrepreneur relationships and how all these factors are affected by that interplay. Risk, imperfect information, agency conflicts, and asymmetric beliefs. Now, what are the main findings? Among others, we find that the duration of a relationship and the expected payoff to the VC increase with the degree of asymmetry in beliefs. In other words, the degree of optimism of the entrepreneur. So in other words, therefore, the VC has significant incentives to feed entrepreneur optimism. That's not so surprising because the VC can exploit that. But what is interesting is that incentive actually also has a beneficial effect on firm values. So from a societal standpoint, it's actually beneficial to feed entrepreneur optimism, make them work hard, exploit that. We also find that depending on the project's intrinsic and technical risk, I'll describe these terms in more detail later on, there are two components of the risk, intrinsic and technical, and the degree of asymmetry in beliefs, we find that VC investments could either increase over time, decrease over time, or vary non-monotonically. And that's exactly what's been reported empirically. You see widely different characteristics of venture capital investments, and the model is able to generate that. Second, we find that the equilibrium long-term contract for the entrepreneur features decreasing pay performance sensitivities, meaning the entrepreneur's pay is more sensitive to performance in early periods than later periods. So as time passes, it becomes less sensitive to performance. That's also something that's been empirically observed. So this is sort of consistent with empirical observations. Third, this is an interesting result. We find that intrinsic and technical risks, two components of the risk, have opposite effects on the duration and economic value of the venture capital relationship. Duration, firm value, and the VC's expected payoff increase with technical risk, but decrease with intrinsic risk. And when I define these terms in detail, you'll see that this is quite surprising. These risks act in opposite directions. And finally, firm value and the expected payoff to the VC are actually enhanced when there's greater noise in the perception of project quality. In other words, from a societal standpoint, it makes sense to actually encourage noise, increase the level of noise in the assessment of project quality. In other words, encourage universities, foster research and R&D and sort of very nascent ventures so that there's a lot of noise. That actually helps, which is, again, very surprising. Now, before going on, I want to talk about what is the philosophical reason why I talk about connections with empirical evidence and then policy implications. The connections with empirical evidence are obviously to basically build validation for the model. The model is supposed to be a depiction, or albeit a simplistic one, of reality, but it should at least match some things that we observe. Then we derive what are called normative or policy implications. Based on this model, we say, okay, this is what a benevolent government who's supposed to be act in the welfare of people should do to improve people's wealth or improve societal welfare. So these are positive implications, which means empirically testable, and normative implications, which are policy implications. So now let me give a brief verbal overview of the model and talk about the players. So we have a continuous time framework with time horizon 0 infinity. At date 0, a cash-constrained entrepreneur with a project approaches a venture capitalist for funding. So the entrepreneur owns the project initially. It may be just some idea. When I use the word project, it could just be an idea, which needs to be developed into something that generates value. So the project could generate value via physical capital investments by the VC and human capital or effort investments by the EN. So economists like to use the word human capital to measure something that's separate from just cash investment, something that's a function of intelligence and other things. So that's human capital. Now, as I mentioned, the VC and the EN have imperfect information about the project. Right? I'm going to model this precisely, but they don't know exactly what the payoffs are going to be. There's some uncertainty. And they also differ in their assessments of the project quality. So there are asymmetric beliefs about the project quality. Now, what happens? So at date zero, the VC offers the EN. If the VC decides to enter into this venture, if the VC believes that, yes, she could get some value from this, she offers the EN a long-term contract. Now, what does this long-term contract entail? It specifies the VC's investments over time, and it also specifies the EN's payoff. Now, this contract features two-sided lack of commitment, which is just economic jargon for saying that either the VC or the EN has the option to terminate the relationship at any date. Both of them have an option. They could terminate, walk away from the relationship if it's profitable for them to do so. And they could threaten to terminate the relationship and initiate a renegotiation of the contract. Right? So a contract it's not set in stone, it can be renegotiated over time. So what happens is basically, in equilibrium, the contract is renegotiation proof, which means that in equilibrium, it's such that neither party would have the incentive to renegotiate because it specifies exactly all the states of nature, it specifies the payoffs to the parties such that neither party would have an incentive to renegotiate, because if they did, the contract would be adjusted. So depending on, so if you imagine a tree that displays all the randomness, the contract is going to specify exactly what's going to happen in all the states of nature so that neither party has any incentive to renegotiate. So in equilibrium, there's no renegotiation. That's the way it occurs. So in other words, the threat of renegotiation brings a constraint on the contract. So in equilibrium, there's no renegotiation. Now, we also assume that the VC, which is also realistic, that the VC possesses the bargaining power in negotiations with the entrepreneur. So in any negotiation, what's going to happen is, as I tell you in the next slide, or before that, what's going to happen is the entrepreneur is going to be essentially brought down to his reservation level, where the entrepreneur is indifferent between continuation and termination. But more about that later. So the VC has the bargaining power. Okay, so now what are the fundamental state variables, the key state variable that we model is the termination value, VFT, of the project. Now what is this termination value? This is like the liquidation value. If either the VC or the EN were to walk away, the project would go into the hands of third-party investors, and that's the market value of the project. And this is the market value outside the VC-EN relationship. Now we assume that both the VC and the EN are crucial to the project. So they possess specific skills that are important to bring this project to fruition. So the liquidation value is actually less than the project's value if both of them carried on with the project, the so-called rational expectations value. So in a perfectly rational world, you rationally anticipate what's going to happen in the future, and that gets incorporated in the value today. So this termination value outside this relationship is less than the rational expectations value. Now, remember, we are talking about contracts, right? Now, contracts are typically written on certain things. Let's say some cash flows. Some portion of the cash flow goes to one party. Another portion goes to another party. Now, a contract has meaning only if it can be enforced by a court of law, right? So first of all, clearly, so all contracts are going to be written on this termination value, so it must be observable so that you know how to apportion the pie. Second, it should be verifiable, which is the term that says that a third party can actually verify this, that this is the cash flow that occurred, and so you can write contracts that could be enforced on this termination value. However, the rational expectations value is non-contractable. Remember that this is not a traded project, right? At the outset, it's going to become an IPO at some stage if it succeeds. So right now, there is no stock that's trading on this company. Now, the stock price, if the stock were traded, the value of the stock would be the rational expectations value. Because since there's no stock being traded, that's not observable. Rational expectations value is not observable and non-contractable. Now, consider a standard setting where the VC is risk neutral because the VC is diversified and the EN is risk averse with intertemporal, with time additive, what are called CARA preferences, a constant absolute risk aversion. So the entrepreneur has a negative exponential utility function. And we assume zero discount rates for simplicity, although it's very easy to incorporate non-zero discount rates. And further for simplicity, we assume that all payoffs occur upon termination. So there is some date, in fact we prove that there is some date when the project will be terminated almost surely, and all payoffs occur when it's terminated. So when it's terminated, the liquidation value, or the termination value, is the payoff. And that payoff is going to be divided among the two parties. So there are no intermediate cash flows. Again, it's very easy to incorporate intermediate cash flows. It doesn't change any of the conclusions of the model. So what are the player's actions? So the VC chooses the long-term renegotiation-proof contract for the entrepreneur and the termination time to maximize her expected payoff. The entrepreneur, in response to this contract, dynamically chooses his effort to maximize his expected utility, payoff upon termination. So this basically describes the dynamic game between the venture capitalist and the entrepreneur. So the VC-EN contract, the VC's dynamic investment policy, the EN's dynamic effort policy, and the termination time, all these things are determined endogenously in what's called a subgame perfect equilibrium of the VC-EN dynamic game. Now the subgame perfect just means that it should be dynamically consistent, meaning the traditional idea of dynamic programming, right? When you choose an optimal action, then it's optimal only if conditioned on the realization it's optimal thenceforth. That's just generalized to an equilibrium setting with two players. So this is basically a stochastic differential game. And that's what we're going to do. So from a mathematical standpoint, we determine the equilibrium of this game. And that's the solution of this problem. Now again, continuing with the verbal description, the key state variable, as I mentioned, is this termination value. How does this termination value change over time? That's where the VC's investment and the EN's effort come in. So the change in the termination value over any time period depends on the investment, the EN's effort, the project's intrinsic quality about which there's imperfect information, and the project's intrinsic risk. This is the risk of the project that remains invariant over time. So there's some constant component of the project. It has this risk which is invariant. And the other, I'll come to that later. So these are the four components. We assume that now, as is typical with venture capital relationships, there's close monitoring. The VC typically monitors on a daily basis, monitors the goings on. So the EN's effort is observable. However, you cannot write a contract directly on the effort. Say, okay, you've exerted so many units of effort, I'm going to pay you this much money. You can't do that. So the contract has to be contingent on the termination value. So the EN must be induced to exert the right amount of effort through this contract. So that's the setup. So the EN must be provided with appropriate incentives to exert effort. So the VC offers a contract contingent on the termination value. So now we've finished with the verbal description. Now let me just bring a few of the details of the model. So the V is the termination value. So the change in the termination value is an Itô process, right? So it has the drift component. The first component is the part that's contributed by the VC and the EN. It's the discretionary part. So the net discretionary output is CT to the alpha, eta T to the beta, where CT is the investment, the VC's investment, eta is the EN's effort, right? And that's what's called a standard Cobb-Douglas production function. So there's investment and effort combined to create output. And L of T is basically, these are operating costs. So these are wages to salaried employees, depreciation expenses, and so on. We assume that they are deterministic and increasing and convex over time. So the presence of these operating costs will ensure that termination occurs in finite time, almost surely. They're increasing and convex. So that's the first component of the evolution of the termination value. Now the intrinsic risk, or B, is a Brownian motion. So this is the component of the project risk that's invariant over time. Both parties know this risk. There is this risk. This is the part that's invariant over time. So the first component and the last component, they are known by both parties. The middle component is the project quality, which is the key in this entire analysis. So the project quality is the growth rate of termination value arising from the intrinsic quality of the project. The VC and the EN have imperfect information about theta and different beliefs. However, the beliefs are common knowledge, so they agree to disagree. Right? So the VC and the EN agree to disagree. They have different beliefs, but they know the beliefs. The uncertainty in the value of theta is the project's technical risk. So remember at the beginning I talked about these two components of risk, the intrinsic risk and the technical risk. The intrinsic risk is the part that's invariant. The technical risk is the uncertainty about project quality. But realize that the termination value, both players are observing the termination value over time. So being rational, they update these beliefs over time. So in other words, so the technical risk is getting resolved over time. They're learning more about the project as time passes, as there are realizations of project quality. Now, so the initial beliefs about theta are normal. So both of them have normally distributed beliefs, but they agree on the technical risk, but they differ in the mean. So you have mu naught VC and mu naught EN are the initial means of the assessments of project quality. So then it's a standard to show that the posterior beliefs are also normal after Bayesian updating over time. The posterior beliefs are also normal, and the variance is given by this expression. Now the key thing to note about this expression is, as one would expect, as the time t goes to infinity, this goes to zero. So if you wait infinitely long, both parties are going to know exactly, they're going to know the project's quality perfectly. Right? But as long as time is finite, you're not going to know. There's always going to be uncertainty. Now, this should be VC. There's a miss, there's a typo here. The difference in assessments is given by delta T. This is going to be a key variable in the analysis. That's the degree of asymmetry in beliefs. And that's given by this expression. Again, as time goes to infinity, these converge. So even though the entrepreneur is optimistic, if he waits sufficiently long, he's going to update his assessments, and finally the beliefs are going to converge. Right? So this is just standard. Okay, so what are the feasible contractual payoffs? The contract specifies the payoffs upon termination. Remember, there are no intermediate cash flows, just for simplicity. Now, this is going to be an FT stopping time, where the filtration is generated by the termination value process, which is observable. Now, what is the contract? Remember that it can be in principle, the relationship can be terminated at any time, any intermediate time. So the contract should strictly specify the payoff to the entrepreneur at each possible date of termination. So basically, the contract is a stochastic process. It's an FT-adapted stochastic process, P, describing the EN's payoff if the relationship is terminated at any date. Right? So it's a continuous process. And V minus P is the VC's payoff, because V is the pi. If it's terminated at any date, by definition, this is the total payoff, so V minus P is the VC's payoff. Now, initially, you must have P of 0 is equal to V of 0, because the EN owns the project. EN is coming to the VC. If no arrangement takes place, the EN just liquidates the project and realizes the payoff V of 0. So initially, the EN owns the project, but as the VC makes investments, the VC's share of the project grows, whereas the EN's share of the project gets affected. Right? That's what's happening. So now let's look at the EN's perspective. So the EN, remember, has a negative exponential utility function. So if tau is the termination time of the project, and the EN's expected utility at date zero is just a negative exponential utility function, where eta is the effort. Right? So the EN incurs a disutility of effort that takes away from the payoff. So that's the utility function. Lambda is the EN's risk aversion, the aversion to risk. And it's going to come into play very crucially. And k eta t to the gamma is the disutility of effort, which is convex. Gamma is greater than 1, so it's convex. So notice that the EN can terminate the relationship at any date and receive the payoff. As a rational individual, the EN continues only if the expected utility from continuing is at least as great as the utility from termination. Right? So that's, everybody is fully rational in the setup. Now let's talk about the VC's perspective. Remember, this is a dynamic game. So the VC's perspective is, crucially, depends on the VC's continuation value. So the VC were to continue, what would the VC get? The VC would get the terminal payoff, which is V tau minus P of tau, minus the payoff if the VC were to terminate right now at date T. Right? If the VC were to terminate right now, that would be the VC's payoff. Minus the future investments that the VC is going to make. Right? Remember, C is a stochastic process. Nothing is assumed to be deterministic. So C is a stochastic process. So this is the continuation value. This is non-negative, the VC is going to continue. If it, once it becomes negative, VC terminates. So that's the decision, the stopping time. Now, since the VC possesses the bargaining power in all negotiations, it turns out you can easily show that termination must occur at the VC's behest in equilibrium. So in equilibrium, it's the VC who decides when to terminate the project. Now remember, termination, by termination, I don't mean it just goes waste. Termination could be an IPO, for instance, where people sell out, becomes an IPO, and they cash out. So termination could be beneficial termination or termination very early, in which case it's liquidation. Right? And again, in equilibrium, the EN is indifferent between termination and continuation. So the EN is basically at the reservation, just indifferent between continuation and termination. So we assume that, that equality is decided in favor of continuation from the entrepreneur standpoint. Okay, so now let me talk about, so far we've talked about a verbal description of the model, talked about some of the details, the actions of the various players. Now we'll start talking about the results of the model, of the analysis. So everything rests on just, we make one assumption on the parameters, where alpha, remember, is the investment, is the sensitivity of physical capital to the change in termination value, CT to the alpha, eta T to the beta. We assume that condition, which basically is just like is a convexity condition that ensures there exists interior equilibria, non-trivial interior equilibria. The first main result is we prove that the optimal contract must have the following affine form. So remember, P is the contract. It must be, so the change in the process P has a drift component AT DT plus BT DVT. This must be the contract form, so that the terminal payoff of the entrepreneur is represented as by that Itô integral, actually general stochastic integral, AT DT plus BT DVT integrated. This must be the form of the contract. Now, what's the idea of the proof? The idea of the proof is you consider any admissible effort process of the entrepreneur, any admissible effort process. By admissibility, there are squared integrability assumptions, which I won't go to right now. They're there in the appendix of the paper. We prove that such a process is implementable in the sense of Holmstrom and Milgram if and only if the contract has this form. Now, let me present a few more details about the idea of the proof. So what we do is, now this basically is a stochastic control problem in the presence of partial information. Now there are some subtle measurability issues associated with the fact that the controls are affecting the observation process but are adapted with respect to the observation process. So because of that, we need to get around these measurability issues following a very standard approach. So you start out with a fixed random process on a probability space and use Gersonov's theorem. So we assume there's a finite terminal date almost surely, and then later on prove that it will be finite. And use Gersonov's theorem so that the investment and effort of the VC and the EN alter the probability distribution of this process. Right? So that's all. So what we're doing is we're altering the probability distribution. We then define the cumulative value process for the EN, which is the conditional expected future utility to the entrepreneur at any date, including the sunk disutility of prior effort. So at any date, there's effort that's been sunk already, there is that disutility. We consider that for a given contract, which is the payoff process, the investment process, and the termination time. So that's given by this expression, right? Then we talk about the certainty equivalent process for the EN. So the EN, so what would be the certain payoff right now that would give the EN the same conditional expected utility? That's the certainty equivalent process, that expression, right? That's all it is. The key result is we prove that a contract PC tau implements a given effort process eta star only if the certainty equivalent process satisfies the stochastic differential equation. Given by this Itô process, right? And the payoff process is exactly equal to the certainty equivalent. So this is what captures the idea that the EN is indifferent between termination and continuation. So the EN is getting exactly his certainty equivalent through the payoff process. So the EN is just kept, so the VC is just making the EN participate at all dates. And the VC decides when to terminate. So this is the condition. So we prove this. And the way we prove this is we use dynamic programming. You basically use the principle of dynamic programming to derive the evolution of the process R such that the EN's optimal effort process is eta star. So the optimal effort is the solution of a dynamic programming problem. So we impose that condition, use the dynamic programming principle to basically show that the certainty equivalent must satisfy this, must evolve this way for the effort process, for the given effort process to be optimal. That's how you end up proving. The detailed proof is in Appendix A. It's somewhat technical, but these are the basic ideas of the proof. So then we basically, once that's the key result, once you do that, you derive the equilibrium contract by backward induction. The first main result we prove in this context is that the equilibrium pay performance sensitivity, BT star, which is the variable component of the contract, the effort, the EN's effort, eta T star, and the VC's investment rate, CT star, are all deterministic. So even though we allow for them to be stochastic processes, in equilibrium, they're all deterministic, functions of time. The fixed portion of the EN's compensation, which is the A term, remember the EN's compensation is A plus B times V. The A term, is just chosen to satisfy its participation constraint, meaning it's chosen to make sure that the EN is going to participate, is going to continue in the relationship, right? So what you're doing is so that's the part that's stochastic, that's going to depend on history. Everything else is deterministic. And that makes the analysis much more tractable, you reach crisp conclusions. We also show that the VC's continuation value at each date is a sum of two terms. Again, these are just standard dynamic programming terms. This is the flow, so within period flow of the VC, which is a function of the pay performance sensitivity and the investment rate. And the second term is just the future option value. Right? So there's a flow term and the future option value. So we derive the equilibrium by first deriving the optimal effort for a given investment and pay performance sensitivity. Then we derive the optimal investment for a given pay performance sensitivity. And then finally derive the optimal pay performance sensitivity. So that's how the sequence goes in deriving these equilibria. And we come up with actual expressions for these. So it turns out that the optimal pay performance sensitivity BT star depends on the VC's objective function and is the solution to the following static optimization problem. Right? So all this stuff basically ends up simplifying the problem because a dynamic problem becomes a sequence of static problems. So the optimal is just a solution of the static problem. And the static problem has three terms. The first term, recall that delta T is the degree of asymmetry in belief, the degree of optimism. That's the economic rent to the VC from the EN's optimism. Remember, the more optimistic the entrepreneur is, the more he's getting, the more the VC is getting from that. The second term is what's called the cost of risk sharing. Right? So this term has actually decreases. So it increases as the risk increases, there's more, the entrepreneur is risk averse, that ends up being a cost to the VC, right? Basically because the entrepreneur is risk averse. So that's the cost of risk sharing with the risk averse entrepreneur. And the third term is the return on investment, the VC's return on investment. So basically the interplay between these three forces determine the equilibrium dynamics in the model. So everything hinges on this optimal investment function, right? This is the key to determine the result of the interplay, because the first two terms are pretty easy, straightforward to analyze. Turns out now we can actually analytically prove that, we show that the optimal investment function must have this form. Right? So it's strongly unimodal. Moreover, it's strictly concave in this interval and strictly convex. So it has to have this form. So we show this result, right, analytically. And this makes the analysis of the equilibrium dynamics quite straightforward, because everything is strongly unimodal, so there's a unique solution. Moreover, it's stable, the equilibrium is stable and everything. So this is a key result to basically establish uniqueness and stability of the equilibrium. So what is the intuition behind that behavior of the optimal? So that's basically the function, that's the investment that the VC will optimally put in for a given pay performance sensitivity. Why does it behave that way? Turns out the intuition is, for a given pay performance sensitivity, an increase in the investment affects the payoff to the VC in two ways. On the positive side, the EN increases effort, because if you give the entrepreneur a greater share of the project, the entrepreneur is going to exert more effort. That increases the output. On the negative side, however, because the entrepreneur is exerting more effort, there's more disutility of effort. And the VC must compensate the entrepreneur for this disutility, right, to ensure that the entrepreneur wants to participate. But that increases the VC's cost to maintain the EN's participation. Now, below a threshold level of the pay performance sensitivity B, the benefits of increased output predominate. Right? So now investment increases. So as the entrepreneur's share of the project increases, the VC's investment also increases. But beyond the threshold, the participation costs dominate. So there, that's the region where the VC is exploiting the entrepreneur. So entrepreneur is getting a large share of the project, but the VC is lowering her investment. So exploiting the entrepreneur. So most of the value is being generated through the entrepreneur's effort rather than the VC's investment. So VC thinks, oh, this guy is so crazy, forget it, let the entrepreneur take the project, I'm going to lower my investment. Right? I'm going to cut my losses. Right? That explains the behavior of this function. Okay, now, In order to analyze the dynamics of this model, we need to compare with benchmark scenarios. Right? Now remember that this model has asymmetric beliefs, imperfect information. So the benchmark, we consider two benchmark scenarios. First is where attitudes to, so symmetric attitudes to risk. So both the VC and the entrepreneur are risk neutral. So there's no risk aversion. And symmetric beliefs. Both of them agree on the assessment of project quality. So this is an idealized benchmark scenario. So this is what we call no agency. So there is no conflict at all. They agree on everything. It's as if they are one agent. They aren't two separate agents. In this case, you can easily show the pay performance sensitivity equals one. Because they are one agent, you just own the project, right? There's no question of sharing. So it's just one, constant through time. And the VC's investment, as well as the EN's effort, are constant. And moreover, the VC's investment attains its highest possible level. So when there are no conflicts, there's no harm, you invest at the highest possible level, everything is fine. The second benchmark scenario is when risk attitudes are asymmetric, but beliefs are symmetric. Right? So now there is agency conflict through risk aversion of the entrepreneur, but symmetric beliefs. Here again, all these things are constant. The pay performance sensitivity is constant through time, investment rate is constant, effort is constant, but all, as one would expect, they're all lower than their levels in the no agency scenario. So again, they're constant through time. Right? But now let's look at this figure, which displays what happens in the actual scenario when beliefs are asymmetric and there's agency. The pay performance sensitivity declines, is initially high and then declines through time and asymptotically approaches the level when beliefs are symmetric. Why does it asymptotically approach this level? Because at that scenario, in that case, as time goes to infinity, as I pointed out, if the asymmetry goes to zero, right? So you have to approach that level. Moreover, it declines. Now in reality, you do observe pay performance sensitivity is changing over time. That's been empirically documented. So what this result tells us is that the presence of asymmetric belief, the presence of entrepreneur optimism, plays a key role in explaining that finding. If there were no optimism, you would not be able to, the optimal contract would be constant through time. I mean, the pay performance sensitivity would be constant through time. The fact that it's not means there must be optimism, and that's affecting the nature of the contract. Now, here's how the investment part looks. So that's the pay performance sensitivity. What about the investment part? Now here, it turns out that this is much, the dynamics here are much more interesting. When the initial degree of asymmetry in belief, the initial degree of entrepreneur optimism is less than the price of risk, delta naught is less than P, then the investment decreases through time. So the VC puts in a large amount initially and then declines over time, again approaching the value when beliefs are symmetric. However, when the entrepreneur is initially exuberant, what we call exuberant, so the entrepreneur's optimism exceeds the price of risk, the path is non-monotonic. So the VC initially increases our investment and then reaches the maximum value, which is the maximum possible investment rate, and after that it declines through time. So it's non-monotonic. Now this is consistent with empirical evidence. So there is empirical evidence that there are different investment paths. They could increase, decrease, or stay constant. Right? But no prior theory has been able to explain these paths. Why you have so many such different investment paths? Why is it optimal? Why does it occur? Our model is able to generate that. It's able to show that, wow, there could be different investment paths, and the key driver is EN optimism. So what is the intuition for the non-monotonic, for these investment paths? The results hinge on the interplay among the entrepreneur's effort, which is positively affected by optimism, and the costs of risk sharing, right, which I remember I pointed out that term, which are negatively affected by intrinsic risk. So they increase with intrinsic risk. Right? Now, the passage of time lowers the degree of entrepreneur optimism, so lowers the rents that the VC can extract by exploiting the entrepreneur's optimism. Right? And that lowers the pay performance sensitivity and effort, because Ian is now not willing to take on so much risk, because he's no longer that optimistic. However, recall I talked about the non-monotonic nature of the optimal investment function. Now, because of the non-monotonic nature, the VC's investment initially increases to compensate for the decline in the entrepreneur's effort. But then, once it's it's a lost cause that the entrepreneur is putting too little effort. The VC also finds it beneficial not to put in that much investment. So the VC's investment decreases over time. This is just like the intuition for that result, which we show analytically. So these are what are the positive implications, rather the empirically validated implications. So the decline of the EN's pay performance sensitivity over time. So with successive capital infusions of the VC, the EN share of the project is going down over time, right? And that's consistent. And as I said, the optimism of the EN plays a key role in explaining this finding. Now with symmetric beliefs, there's no change in the EN's equity stake. Second thing is observed investment paths could either increase, decrease, or initially increase and then decrease, and that's consistent with evidence. Now we can also derive, analytically derive, several comparative statics, several sensitivity results. So what happens when the initial technical risk increases, intrinsic risk increases, and risk aversion increases? As one would expect, the entire path goes down, the pay performance sensitivity. So EN is not willing to take as much share of the project. As any of these variables increase, B goes down. That's not surprising. Now what about the investment path? Here, this crucially depends on whether the EN is initially reasonably optimistic, so the degree of optimism is less than the price of risk, or exuberant. If the EN is reasonably optimistic, then the investments go down with all these variables, which again is intuitive. Risk increases, you lower your investment. But what is very surprising is the next figure. When the EN is initially exuberant, here, notice that in early periods, even though risk is increasing, all these components that affect risk are increasing, the VC actually increases their investment. But beyond a threshold time period, the investment goes down. So there is this single crossing of these paths. Right. So this is very, very surprising. The fact that risk can actually, with higher risk, can actually increase your investment. Right. Now, what's the intuition for that? The change in the VC's equilibrium investment path depends on whether the EN is initially reasonably optimistic or exuberant. If the entrepreneur is initially reasonably optimistic, the costs of risk sharing dominate the effects of optimism, right? Because optimism isn't sufficient. So here, the standard result applies. However, if the entrepreneurs are exuberant, then there are two forces. The resolution of this optimism, which is the decline over time, versus the cost of risk sharing. In early periods, this optimism dominates the cost of risk sharing. So the VC increases their investment to feed the EN optimism. But in later periods, the second effect dominates, so you have this crossing. Okay. Now let me just go to the project duration. So we proved that the optimal termination policy, not surprisingly, is a trigger policy. So there exists a mu T star such that the VC terminates the project only if the assessment of project quality is less than this trigger. And these basically correspond to triggers in the termination value. These are the performance targets that must be met to ensure continuation. Moreover, we also proved that the project duration increases with the initial degree of asymmetry in beliefs and decreases with the entrepreneur's risk aversion and cost of effort. Okay, now let me just quickly talk about the calibration of the model, because as I said, it's calibrated empirical evidence. So in the first approach, we classify parameters as either direct or indirect. Direct parameters meaning we use data out there to set these parameter values. And the indirect parameters for which there is no data available, we basically set them by matching the model's predictions to data. So the direct parameters are just the initial assessment of project quality, where we use the capital asset pricing model to set it. The initial systematic and initial technical risk, that's also there's empirical data on. The initial degree of asymmetry in beliefs, and the disutility of effort. This is a parameter that we set. The indirect parameters are the risk aversion of the entrepreneur, which is difficult to get from data. The level of disutility. The two components of the production function, that's the capital and the effort intensities, and the loss function parameter, right? So these are used to match empirical data. I won't go through the description of the detailed data, but these are empirical data on which are matched by the model. So the model predicts these statistics, and they are matched to these actual documented data. So we set these parameters by doing this, right? In the second approach, we classify pronouns as either firm-specific or EN-specific. This is a different approach. The limitation of the first approach is, although the data is on a cross-section of firms, but we are assuming these parameters in the model are fixed for this entire cross-section implicitly, right? But that's unrealistic. So second approach takes that into account. What we do is we match a distribution. So we assume there are a finite number of possible types of firms, and we find the distribution of these firms that matches data. Right? So that's the philosophy of the second approach. But let me just go past this and talk about, so once we choose the parameters, we analyze the model, we numerically analyze the model and study the effects of technical risk and intrinsic risk. So what happens when technical risk increases? We find that the net firm value generally increases in all the three scenarios, in the two benchmark scenarios, symmetric and no agency, as well as in the actual scenario. So this is what I alluded to in the beginning, that increase in technical risk, increase in the noise and the perception of project quality has a positive effect on firm value. All of them increase. I'll explain why later on. This is VC's payoff. The VC's payoff versus technical risk, again, increasing. Right? Initially, it's non-monotonic here, but it's generally increasing with technical risk. So the VC is benefiting from technical risk. And finally, this is the duration of the project. All of them increase. So with technical risk has a positive effect on all these things. Now look at intrinsic risk, the constant component. Here, all of them are decreasing. Right? All of them are decreasing as risk increases. Here too, all of them decreasing. All these three variables. Why is this the case? The reason why this is the case is the key state variable, remember, it turns out that everything depends on the VC's assessment of project quality. All the things depend on that, right? Determination depends on that. That evolves according to this equation, right? Where the standard deviation, sigma t mu, notices, if you look at this expression, that expression increases with sigma naught squared, and beyond a threshold, decreases with S. This is the intrinsic risk. And that's the key to explain our results. Because the VC's continuation value recall has the within period flow component and the future option value. So essentially, the trade-off is between the future option value and the payoff that you get right now. And that's what's driving this. Because as the standard deviations, as the technical risk increases, notice that expression, the standard deviation increases with sigma naught squared. So the standard deviation of the mean assessment of project quality is increasing. Right? That has a positive effect on option value. As we know, option values, our call option values, increase with risk. The deterministic component decreases. We can show it decreases. Right? So now the future option value increases, deterministic component decreases, this dominates by far. Right? So as technical risk increases, this has a positive effect. What about intrinsic risk? As intrinsic risk increases, the standard deviation goes down. Right? So there's less variance. The within period flow, again, that also goes down. Future option value also goes down. So all these three things go down, so intrinsic risk has a negative effect on duration, expected payoff to the VC, and firm value, whereas intrinsic risk has a positive effect. Again, we can do the same thing for the degree of asymmetry in beliefs, and you can show that all these things have these directions, right? So future option value is the key. It goes up with intrinsic risk, goes down. It goes up with technical risk, goes down with intrinsic risk. So in conclusion, so this is a dynamic model of VC investment which captures the fact that you have high levels of intrinsic and technical risk, two components of risk. It incorporates agency conflicts, imperfect information, and asymmetric beliefs. And it highlights the importance of staged investment and vesting and dynamic contracting in mitigating inefficiencies arising from these things. Right? So naturally, it's a prediction of the model that there is vesting and there's staged investment. That comes out of the model. It's not assumed. So the positive implications, the empirically testable ones, are declining pay performance sensitivity, increasing, decreasing, or non-monotonic investment paths, technical and intrinsic risks of opposing effects, and EN optimism could be exploited by the VC. The normative or the policy implication is that society benefits up to a threshold from greater noise in project quality. So you want to encourage university R&D. You want to encourage universities. Society benefits from that. Right? So this is basically a dynamic, what's called a principal agent model. With double-sided model hazard, there are two agents, both of whom can act according to their interests. Risk, imperfect information, asymmetric beliefs. This is not only applicable to this setting, it's more generally applicable, this basic framework. It can be applied to study conflicts between managers and shareholders, financing of R&D, and also delegated portfolio management, mutual funds and investors. So this is more generally applicable than this setup. That concludes the talk. Thank you very much.